basis, Pitt Tech versus Pitt Tech. And we'll just wait for a minute and let everybody get settled.
And we motion.
Are we ready? Okay. Our next case is Pitt Tech versus Pitt Tech. Yes, please.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Zachary Lutz-Preford, and I represent Jasmine Pitt Tech appellant here today. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case involves the dissolution of the marriage of Jason and Jasmine Pitt Tech, as well as the deprivation of rights Ms. Pitt Tech suffered towards the end of the dissolution proceedings. This appeal is specifically an appeal from a motion to vacate the March 15, 2017 court order, which dissolved the marriage of Jason and Jasmine Pitt Tech, along with allocating assets of the marriage and setting no alimony. The facts of this case are fairly simple. In 2002, Jason and Jasmine Pitt Tech were married. In 2015, the parties began disillusionment proceedings. Initially, in 2015, the court ordered joint temporary physical and legal custody. In that conclusion, the court found that Mr. Pitt Tech made $132,500 per month and that Ms. Pitt Tech made $1,200 per month. As a result, the court ordered a substantial child support payment and alimony from Mr. Pitt Tech to Ms. Pitt Tech. In January of 2016, Mr. Pitt Tech sought and was granted from the court compelling Ms. Pitt Tech to undergo drug testing and a chemical dependency evaluation. At that same time, Mr. Pitt Tech attempted to have the court change the custody arrangement, and the court denied. In August of 2016, amongst a series of other motions, Mr. Pitt Tech again sought to have the child custody arrangement modified, and this time the court granted it in part on the basis that Ms. Pitt Tech had tested positive a number of times for methamphetamine use. In February of 2017, Ms. Pitt Tech's counsel made an oral argument to the court to withdraw. Said motion was granted. Following that motion, at the same hearing, Mr. Pitt Tech requested two things. First, that Ms. Pitt Tech be prohibited from submitting any evidence at trial. This motion was granted. Second, that trial be accelerated by a matter of 3 weeks. Again, this motion was granted. At that time, Mr. Pitt Tech had sent...
What evidence is there in the record of notice to Ms. Pitt Tech about her counsel's motion, oral motion to withdraw?
There's no evidence in the record regarding the oral motion to withdraw in February of 2017. With regard to prior motions to withdraw from different attorneys, there was certificates of service emailed to Ms. Pitt Tech.
But nothing in the record to show that she was even aware that her third set of attorneys were withdrawing at that hearing.
That is correct, Your Honor. Now, following that February 2017 order, a certificate of service was prepared and sent by counsel for Mr. Pitt Tech. This was sent to the email address which Mr. Pitt Tech personally would communicate with Ms. Pitt Tech at. No physical copy was ever served upon Ms. Pitt Tech of this notice.
This was the notice of the new trial date.
That is correct.
Okay.
In March of 2015, the new trial was had. The trial was uncontested by Ms. Pitt Tech because she never had received notice and was not present at the trial. During that trial, no alimony was awarded, and an inequitable distribution of marital estate was had. Also at that time, Mr. Pitt Tech was never asked the question of whether he had actually disclosed all of his marital estate to the court. Following that trial, the court issued a written decree. That decree also was accompanied by a certificate of service. The certificate of service went to only two parties. John Slovacek, a former attorney for Ms. Pitt Tech, who had withdrawn from representation in August of 2017, and Mr. Belmont, the attorney for Mr. Pitt Tech. Nowhere in the court record does it disclose that Ms. Pitt Tech was actually provided notice of the outcome of the March 2017 hearing.
Can I back you up just a moment to the notice of the new trial date sent in February of 17 to the business email, and then I believe the... Oh, her second attorney's filed motions to intervene for fees was also mailed to the business email address. My question is, in connection with your motion to vacate, was there any evidence presented in our record that, with regard to whether your client received notices at that business email address?
There's a dispute in the record as to that. Affidavit submitted at the motion to vacate indicate that from Ms. Pittack's affidavit, she'd never received notice of the accelerated trial or the outcome of the trial. Mr. Pittack submitted an affidavit establishing that it was at a minimum sent. However, there is no evidence that shows she actually received said email.
But any other general evidence about this is where, I think you mentioned that the husband would communicate with her via this business email. Was there information like that in the record that she would have received other communications at that email?
There was evidence that she would have received other communications from Mr. Pittack, but there was no evidence that she would have received any other communications from the law firm representing Mr. Pittack.
Under those circumstances, when counsel withdraws in the middle of proceedings like this, now the party's pro se, where do you serve them?
The Nebraska Rule of Court 6-1105 says that it can be served to the last known address, to their place of business, or physical service can be made upon the party. It does allow electronic services in a handful of limited circumstances. The first is to attorneys who are participating in the Nebraska justice system. Electronic service can come through the court notification system. The second is where a party has at the time submitted a signature block that traditionally appears on attorney's pleadings, which lists an email address. Service can be sent to that email address. Absent those two instances, the party has to have specifically consented to service through electronic means. So where parties have withdrawn, where counsel is withdrawn, the appropriate place to send it is either in person to the business or to the last known residence. That being said, in this case, that's not what happened. The rule, specifically 6-1105, was not followed. Ms. Pittack was never noticed properly in accordance with the rules. As a result, Ms. Pittack didn't know there was a trial, and Ms. Pittack didn't know the outcome of the trial.
Is there any evidence in the record that she even knew she was without counsel at that point in time? From what I could see, the certificate of service on the order allowing the withdrawal was not copied to her.
Correct, Your Honor. There is no evidence establishing that she knew that she was without counsel at that time. Now, the natural result of somebody not knowing that a hearing is occurring is that they don't attend the hearing. And the natural result of a contested case with only one party represented is that a very rosy picture is painted to the court with no dispute occurring as to the facts in the record. And that's exactly what happened in this case. Now,
why the long delay then? I mean, I recall that she was aware of the decree by summer.
Correct, Your Honor.
But yet, a motion to vacate wasn't filed till November, towards the end of the year. No, actually the last day, towards the very last.
Correct,
day
December,
of the year.
December 29th, Your
yeah.
Honor. I don't believe the record reflects exactly why there was the delay there, but what is clearly established is that she did file within the term of court, and therefore the motion was at least timely filed. As a result of the hearing, Ms. Pittack Ms. Pittack was never noticed of what the outcome was. She couldn't file for an appeal within 30 days because she did not know within 30 days. She couldn't ask the court for a new trial to hear evidence or to correct errors in the record as a result of fraud by omission or outright fraud. And she couldn't ask the court to alter or amend issues with the complaint or with the decree.
So she filed a pro se answer and counterclaim, I believe.
Yes, she did.
And in that, she used that business address, which she's claiming now that she didn't receive documents at.
That's correct. And I think that had she... That, what's important to note is the date on that is more than 30 days beyond when the decree was supposedly sent to the parties. This isn't a situation where a retroactive act can cure. She hadn't consented to receiving at that address as of February 3rd, 2017, nor March 3rd, 2017.
So to the extent that her submission of that pro se document included that email address with some kind of consent then to be served there, that came after the fact.
Exactly. So going forward, any consent sent to the email address would be proper, but previously, it can't be.
What about their argument, why didn't she show up in April for her original trial date? I mean, I understand if it was moved and you missed it, you didn't get it, but she didn't show up for the trial date either, did she?
There's no evidence that she did or did not show up for that trial date. It's very possible that she showed up and the courtroom was empty, and being an unsophisticated person who was not familiar with the legal process, she left.
But she didn't allege that in her affidavit supporting her motion to vacate.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I think what's also important to note with regard to that sophistication level is the fact that she filed an answer after almost 2 years after her initial answer and counterclaim had been filed. This is someone who is no longer guided in any form by counsel as of February of 2017. And really was put at a disadvantage by the fact that she didn't even have an idea of what was going on in her case. And with that, Your Honor, I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Ben Belmont, and I represent the appellee, Jason Pittock, in these proceedings. First, I'd like to clarify some of the of what I've just heard as far as whether a motion that Mr. Pittock filed was that was heard on February 3rd, 2017, a part of which was to accelerate the trial date. It was not. We did not file a motion on February to accelerate that trial date.
You talked about it at that hearing.
We talked about it at that hearing. That hearing is very important. First of all, that was at a hearing that Ms. Pittock was to have appeared at and show cause why she shouldn't be held in a, for contempt again, which would have been the second or third time, for failing to attend her deposition, which she failed to attend.
And that was a motion you filed. It wasn't on an order to show cause, correct?
It wasn't an order to show cause. It was a motion asking that the court appear. Counsel was going to have his client there, and at that point, the court was going to make a determination. One of our sanctions in that February 3rd was not only to present her from any evidence, that was one of the elements, but also to enter a default judgment because we were just going in circles here. That February 3rd, 2017 hearing is important. That was a hearing, again, she was supposed to show up and she failed to appear, but her counsel stated on the record something very interesting. What he said is, we've had no contact with Ms. Pittock since the scheduled deposition date and are limited to only contacting her by email.
So given that, your motion to address her failure to appear was filed after that scheduled deposition date in January 25th. She didn't appear.
Correct.
And if they had no contact with her, how do we know from this record that she was even aware she needed to be at this February 3rd hearing?
I don't know, but that would be up with between her and her counsel to be present at that hearing.
Because of the oral motion to withdraw, and that happened immediately, so preceding your hearing on your motion, the record doesn't establish that she had notice that she, one, needed to be there for your motion, or two, that she needed to know that her attorneys were withdrawing. There's nothing to indicate she had notice.
But that, excuse me, but that shouldn't be on Mr. Pittock. Mr. Pittock's not doing anything to prejudice her. She's having difficulty in her communications with her own counsel. She's, if you look at the pattern of her conduct throughout these proceedings, where she had, I think we had three or four motions to compel. She refused to take weekly drug tests. She failed hair follicle tests. She wouldn't leave the residence until I had to obtain an order. She served 2 days in jail. She refused to even the order on the deposition to come and be deposed.
Yeah, but the one thing that's fairly evident from the record also, I mean, not disputing the things you raised, but there were definitely issues going on here. But one thing was clear, she was always represented. She had three sets of attorneys.
Correct.
And there really weren't gaps in her representation until the end.
Well, there were certain gaps between attorneys, I think two and three, because we were, first of all, the when you asked earlier about the email address, her lawyers all used her email address. Her first attorney, who withdrew, emailed her at her the same email address we're talking about, jasmineeventsinbloom@yahoo.com. So and in between attorneys, when I'd be filing motions, I believe we emailed her directly using that same address based on what her attorneys had done. All attorneys were noticing her in for either motions to withdraw at that same email. So it wasn't just us when we sent the notice, the amended notice of trial to that email address. There was also a court order. And whether she's a pro se litigant or whether she is represented, she has an obligation to follow her case and she has an obligation to be involved. And she needs to do equity because throughout these proceedings, she failed to comply, she's created this situation, and now she comes to court and say, hey, vacate this because it's not fair all of a sudden.
Here's another problem from what I can tell. The February 13th order that rescheduled the trial date to March 13th contained absolutely no certificate of service. Now, I know you have indicated, and I think the record reflects that your office mailed something or sent something to her by email.
Correct.
But the court's order that actually rescheduled the trial date has no certificate of service whatsoever.
I don't know what happens on that proceeding once we prepare an order and submit it to the court and they have it entered. So I'm not sure what happened. That wouldn't be on Mr. Pittock's part. But there still, it still was, because it's date them, it still was in the file. And it still should have been her duty to basically file or to follow her case and find out what the status of this case is. Why she waited 9 months there's still been no explanation as to 9 months. Why she didn't the court found at the motion to vacate that it was disingenuous that she didn't receive notice of the March 13th, 2017 hearing.
The court also made this finding in its order. It stated that each of the motions to withdraw, which were filed, notified Jasmine at her business email address. And that is true to the first two sets of attorneys. But we don't even have a motion to withdraw that was filed by her last set of attorneys, and that was within a month of trial being set.
Right, and again, that wasn't an error addressed, and that shouldn't be held on Mr. Pittock, who's now going through his, took over 2 years to even get it that far and to try to get this matter to court. He didn't do anything to disrupt any conduct between her lawyers and herself. She had three sets of lawyers throughout these proceedings. And at some point in time, you'd have to ask yourself, is it the lawyers or is it her and her cooperation level on all of this?
But it's after her third lawyers withdrew, she doesn't have a lawyer, and she hasn't gotten notice that her lawyers have withdrawn.
Again.
And so, I appreciate it's not your client's fault,
right.
But is that really the issue here? Is it just, did she receive proper notice?
And we believe she did receive proper notice from us using her email, because that was all she had provided anybody. She didn't know, and again, you don't know, I guess, and there was no evidence taken at their motion to vacate, and I think it's her burden to show as to what happened there, or whether she knew, or whether her lawyers told her this, or whether her lawyers told her that. This is her burden to show on a motion to vacate why it should be vacated. I'm not sure she met that burden. She didn't present the evidence necessary for this court to even review it at this time. So,
isn't it this court's obligation, though, in order to avoid a miscarriage of justice, to determine some of these types of things on a plain error review, even if it wasn't specifically raised?
I assume you have that right to. Of course you have the right to look at it at plain error, but there is, I'm not sure that again, while it's going to fall on Mr. Pittock instead of, the relationship that Ms. Pittock had with her own lawyers regarding these issues. And if she didn't get notice, why didn't her affidavit indicate, Kate, I mean, if she had these problems with her lawyer and didn't know her lawyer withdraw, that would have been a big part that I didn't know my lawyer withdrew. But there's nothing in our affidavit which indicates that. And we're just speculating now, and because there's no notice that about the manner in which her lawyer withdrew, we don't know. And I'm not...
Well, yeah, and your client... according to your brief, I think he paid $175,000. I don't think the record shows a full $175,000, but regardless, over $100,000 in her attorney fees. And it's clear that there was discovery that was done and there were some issues in getting discovery completed. But nevertheless, it appears those attorney fees, not just the second attorneys, but the first set, and I don't know about the third set, the record really doesn't disclose that, but a lot of money spent to look at what looks to be a fairly substantial marital estate. And a month before the scheduled trial date, the record doesn't show us that Ms. Pittack had proper notice of what was going on, that counsel's withdrawing, that she's to be present to discuss why she wasn't had her January 25th deposition. Do you agree that that's a problem if there's nothing in the record to show that she had notice of those?
I don't think that, well, again, is it a problem? It should be a problem on the issue, on this sole issue of whether the motion to vacate for these reasons against Mr. Pittack. Mr. Pittack wasn't responsible for that. This is Ms. Pittack's relationship with her own counsel on these issues. It isn't for Mr. Pittack to have made it. I could see if Mr. Pittack did something to interrupt or interfere with her relationships with her lawyers, but it wasn't Mr. Pittack. And I don't know if we have to put the burden on him to show, you know, Mr. Pittack, you show us why Ms. Pittack didn't have counsel or she didn't know what was going on at the time.
Is that a requirement on a motion to vacate, that the moving party would have to show fault on the part of the non-moving party? Or is
no.
it just, when it comes to notice, that it's really a due process kind of thing?
Sure, and again, the court found that she had notice, and I believe that the record indicates, again, all the lawyers were sending it to her at that email address. She, 9 days or 10 days after we send her notice of the trial, 10 days after that, she's emailing, and there's an attachment to Mr. Pittack's affidavit that's been marked that shows an email communication between those two at that same email. So
wasn't that email dated earlier?
I think it was February
20. I mean, it preceded the change in the trial date.
It preceded the dip. I think it was 9 days after I had sent nine or 10 days. If I'm correct, I may be wrong, but it was in close proximity that she's using and having conversations on that email. And it no time did she reach out. And again, I think a pro se litigant, a litigant being represented by an attorney, has an obligation. And if it should be on Mr. Pittock's, and I know that my time is up, and we would respectfully request that the order of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Did you have something else?
No.
Okay. Do we have some time left? Okay.
Your Honors, whether this was an error of the court or an error of Mr. Pittack, a manifest injustice was performed upon Ms. Pittack. She was never noticed of the seminal events in a court proceeding, the trial and the disposition of the trial. And regardless of whose fault that is, the evidence is clear that Ms. Pittack did not have notice. She could not adequately defend herself or correct the errors when she had absolutely no notice of any kind of the proceedings. And as a result, this order must be vacated because she could not perform what she needed to perform at any point in time during the final portions of this proceeding.
Your client certainly didn't help herself in this, did she?
Sure, Your Honor. The fact that there were issues going on related to her drug use did not help herself. However, as we point out in our brief, this is indicative of a substance abuse problem, which the DSM-5 recognizes as a psychiatric disorder, which Black's Law Dictionary would classify as a psychiatric disorder, and which, pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 42-362, should have entailed a guardian ad litem or attorney being appointed to represent her. This was never considered by the court, even though by the statute.
It was considered by the court.
You're correct, Your Honor. It was considered by the court when it was never raised and when a separate but related motion had been raised. But the court, by all accounts, believed Ms. Pittack had a psychiatric disorder by way of having a substance abuse problem, and rather than appointing someone to represent her, failed to do so. And as such, we would request that the court reverse and remand.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you both very much. Matter submitted, and you are excused.